All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from New York City on this, the third day of April, 2018. Do like to remind you that I'm the editor of Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks, and you can subscribe to that by going to miningstocks.com. miningstocks.com or call our office in New York, 718-457-1426, 718-457-1426. We do like to also remind you that we're affiliated with Chen Lin. What is Chen buying? What is Chen selling? You can subscribe to that letter by going to chenpicks.com, chenpicks.com. I want to thank each of you for listening to the show, making it one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. Also want to invite you to continue sending along your questions, criticisms, praises, whatever you have to say about this show. Send it to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions4taylor@gmail.com. And of course, we do want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Our sponsors for today's show are RN Resources, Bonterra Resources, Dynacore Gold Mines, Genesis Metals Corp., Klondike Gold, New Range Gold Corp., Northern Empire, and Novo Resources. I've titled today's show, China's Plan to End Dependency on American Trade. Alistair McLeod, Michael Oliver, and Brian Groves are return guests today. Superpowers prevail and expand until the hand of God says no more. Financed by what can only be defined as a fraudulent monetary system after Nixon removed the intrinsic value from gold, from the dollar, by taking gold away from it, the U.S. was able to create seemingly endless amounts of money out of thin air to fund military and clandestine activities to expand its presence around the globe, but also, of course, for politicians to give goodies away to those who vote for them. As the Soviet Union was in the process of its own statist self-destructive design, in order to ensure it went away peacefully, President Bush promised the Soviet Union that NATO would not encroach on Russia by taking former satellites of the Soviet Union into NATO. But alas, that promise has been broken, with numerous former Soviet satellites taken into NATO now, becoming members of NATO. And now NATO entirely encircles Russia, even as neocons would have you believe that Russia is even more of a danger to us now than it was during the Cold War. For reasons that are entirely understandable, Russia doesn't like the U.S. threatening its sovereignty, nor does China appreciate the U.S. telling it that it doesn't have the right to control its own sea lanes in the South China Sea. Given these geopolitical realities, which so far, as we know, continue to include the U.S. military being second to none, it isn't surprising that both China and Russia and other countries aligned with them are fighting back by targeting the U.S. where it is most vulnerable, namely, with its deteriorating economy and financial system that is built not on the rock of a sound gold-backed currency, but rather an increasingly vulnerable fiat-based monetary system that is based on debt. And if that debt can't be paid, the system becomes increasingly insolvent and unstable. It was the financial crisis of 2008-2009 that hurt various countries around the world that caused China to start to implement ways to lessen its dependency on a dollar that is increasingly unstable and to create a monetary system of a more sound footing, perhaps based on gold. At least we know for sure that China has been encouraging its citizens to import gold. By all credible accounts, massive amounts of gold have been flowing into China from the Western world. At the same time, Russia has built up its gold reserves, as have other countries friendly to Russia and China. In addition, China and its partners, the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and South Africa, have begun building a massive new trading and institutional infrastructure, including a system of global monetary transfer, a banking system, as well as railways, highways, and sea lanes for trade that are outside of the Anglo-American Empire. Well, in the second hour of today, the second half of today's show, I should say, Alistair MacLeod will join me from his home in England to discuss how China is using its rising economic power to gain independence from the abuses of the U.S. dollar hegemony and what that may mean not only for our financial markets but for our economy and the privileged way of life that most of us post-World War II babies have become accustomed to. While Alistair will provide us with a possible view of the impact of declining dollar in the Western world, Michael Oliver will be with me in just a moment to step aside from the theoretical to relate what is actually transpiring now with some major tectonic market changes, including what looks to be a new paradigm in the markets that may be taking us back to the stagflation days of the 1970s, or possibly, God forbid, something worse. Now, if gold is the antidote for China in a world in which the financial system is in the process of self-destruction, I firmly believe gold will likely also be the antidote for folks living in the Western world who are able to pull their heads out of the sands of massive propaganda aimed at keeping all of us conned into believing in government and central bank miracles. Most people will be sucked into the mainstream propaganda and will suffer greatly as a result, but I'm guessing that many, if not most, of the listeners of this show will realize the dangers of continuing to buy without question everything you hear in the mainstream media. How many brokers do you know that are suggesting that you have at least a small amount of your portfolio on gold and silver and the companies that produce those monetary metals? Well, it's amazing, but most people don't realize just how well gold has done relative to stocks since the beginning of this new century. I'll bet you didn't know that since January 1, 2000, gold has risen by 462%, while the S&P Total Return Index has risen by 263%. In other words, if you had purchased the S&P 500 back then, you would have, if you'd purchased gold, you'd have been 200% better off with that investment than if you purchased the S&P, and that includes dividends that went into the S&P owners. But Wall Street has its own products to sell, and it can't make money selling you gold. So gold's performance is a dirty little secret. It's kept from you. One person who would not be amazed by gold's outperformance relative to stocks would be Michael Oliver, and I'm pleased to say hello to Michael. Thanks for joining me again today, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Always good to have you back with me because of your accuracy. The work you do has been so dependable, so helpful to me. You put out something this morning just showing a shorter-term comparison of gold to the S&P. This is a year 2000. Well, this is since 2015. We've seen the equity markets rise dramatically, but gold has done almost as well, right?
Yep. It's S&P at its peak, if we start from the close of 2015. Now, remember, in late 2015, the S&P was under pressure like gold. It was well off its highs. And basically, you know, late 2015, early 2016, a lot of commodities and stocks turned up simultaneously. Oil made a low about the same time as the S&P did, early 16. Gold made its low in the tail end, the lowest monthly close is the December close of 2015. So they were, you know, somewhat in sync. But the S&P went up 38% to its January close of this year, measured from the 2015 close, whereas gold has been hovering for the last few months up about 25 or so percent from its 2015 low. Now, with the S&P wobble that we've just had, or I call it a breakage, the difference is about a half percent from the 2015 close to the present. Now, remember, this is a period when gold does not perform well versus the S&P, instead of the long-term picture that you discussed going back 20 years.
Yeah.
So gold, I showed a simple column chart of gold in S&P right now. It's measured since 2015, and you can barely tell the difference. Yet nobody in the financial press is talking about gold.
No.
And the sudden change now where they're the neck and neck instead of one column being shorter than the other. Gold is neck and neck with the S&P. It's in part due to two things. One, the S&P dropping, and two, gold hanging in tough near its upper end of the multi-year range here. I did a momentum study of the that performance since 2014, and it broke out last month.
Mm-hmm.
So monthly momentum says it's not only this firming of gold relative to the S&P or weakening of S&P versus gold. It's not just some near-term phenomenon. It's actually a breakout.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it looks to me like gold is now likely to continue to outperform and outpace the S&P. Now, maybe at some point the financial press will actually get hold of that story and mention it. But
right.
You know, for the last year or two, nobody's mentioned the fact that gold's done quite well despite the smokescreen of stocks. And, of course, as investors get disenchanted with stocks, they got to go somewhere. And
yeah.
Gold's been behaving well. So it's not like it's a feel-bad market. It's a feel-good market, and I think it will attract a lot of the money. Certainly feels better than Bitcoin.
Well, I mean, speaking... go ahead, Michael.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, speaking of stocks, I mean, they're looking wobbly right now. What are your momentum indices saying about...
Broken. I mean, I think it's over
you're,
now.
You're broken, yeah.
Yeah, I think the top's in place. We were waiting on the NASDAQ 100 and the PNQI, which is the ETF of Internet stocks, the leaders, in other words, the Googles, Amazons, et cetera. They both broke. And the break in February in the S&P and most developed market indices around the world was conclusive to us, but NASDAQ and the PNQI did not break key structures in the February
mm-hmm.
break. They did this week.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think the game's on. Also, if you plot NASDAQ 100 performance relative to the S&P, it's in sharp decline. And it's not just in decline, it's in breakage. In other words, it's breaking momentum trend structures of the relationship, indicating there's more to come. So going forward, we expect the market to go down and NASDAQ 100 to be a leader on the downside, just like
mm-hmm.
it was on the upside.
Mm-hmm.
The only question in my mind is, in what manner is the decline unfold? Could we crash? It's possible. Or are we going down in sharp layers? I'm more
mm-hmm.
inclined to think sharp layers. I see some support in NASDAQ 100 about 10% below here. Now, that's a pretty bad percent, considering you're already well off the high.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you get the NASDAQ 100 down, 5,900 area, about 10% below current market, I'm watchful for a possible shelf of support, not a bottom, just a shelf of support that might cause a rally. But if we go crashing through that level dramatically, then, you know, we could be in crash mode. And I frankly don't know the answer to the nature of the decline. I am just a bear now, fully bearish.
Right. Well, it seems pretty clear that the equity markets are not going to go down without a fight. I'm looking today at the Dow is up 350 points as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
NASDAQ is up 1.18%, up 81 and change. So
mm-hmm.
S&P is up strong. So, you know, there's a lot of believers. We've had a long bull market, and it's pretty hard to get convinced people that you don't want to be in stocks. You got to be there.
Yeah,
got to
no,
be in it to
I,
win
I quite
it.
Agree, and we've warned our subscribers that you know that you can get these rallies that just curl your hair. And so, if you are short these markets, you better be short in a way that you could accommodate your portfolio, your wherewithal.
Mm-hmm.
Heavily leveraged, if you can't afford it, don't do it.
Right.
And also, you don't have to do it all at once. You can do it piecemeal.
All right.
It's a dangerous situation, but I do think the top has been made. And the only question now is, in what manner do the legs of decline unfold?
Yeah, and what I really appreciate about your work, Michael, is the momentum charts that you show so clearly. For example, I'm looking at the one you talked about earlier on gold, and quite clearly momentum has broken out, but you couldn't tell that by looking at the gold chart, at the price chart. So, you know, this is typical of what you do, and same thing on the downside, of course, with stocks and so forth. The momentum, the structure is broken, and then, you know, it just works. It seems to work amazingly well, which is why I am so thankful that you come on to talk to us every week. It's really great, and I should tell everybody, it's Oliver MSA, OliverMSA.com. Go there, learn more about Michael's work, and if you are a serious investor, you may want to think seriously about subscribing to Michael's letter. Thank you so much for being with us again, Michael. And
thank you,
hopefully
Jay.
You can be with us again next week. Well, folks, we do have to go to break now. Don't go away, though, because Brian Groves, who heads up Genesis Metals, will be with us. That's a company with a growing gold resource in Quebec. It's a company that I've invested in personally, and it's one of my top picks in my newsletter, Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Brian Groves.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
New Range Gold Corp is a Canadian junior explorer focused on its recently acquired flagship Pamlico Gold Project, located in Nevada, one of the best mining jurisdictions in the world. Known as one of Nevada's highest grade gold districts, Pamlico was held by private interests for most of its history and remains largely unexplored. Drilling by New Range is already confirming the legendary grades of the district with intercepts up to 341 grams gold per ton. Well financed with no debt, New Range is unlocking shareholder value at Pamlico and trades under TSX symbol NRG. A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon Territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really glad to have with me once again Brian Groves. He's the CEO and is also a director with Genesis Metals. Brian has over 30 years of experience in Australia and Canada mining and exploration, and he's worked with some pretty big companies like Amex Minerals, Noranda, and Placer Gold. Named companies in the past as a geologist, an exploration geologist, and I've known him for quite a few years, actually, with another junior mining company in the past, and I've really think very highly of him and his ability to go find the metals where they are, and he certainly had a great track record. So, really pleased to have him with us today. I own Genesis Metals, and I always start out by looking at the people that run the companies. And so that is one of the reasons certainly Brian is a main attraction here. So the company trades in Toronto under the symbol GIS. You can buy it in the U.S. as I have under the symbol GGISF. 74.8 million shares, I believe. Number of shares out, but it's trading for a mere 8 cents, giving it a market cap in U.S. money of around $6 million. Thanks for joining me again, Brian.
Jay, thanks very much for having me again. Thank you.
Always good to have you. I'd like to start out maybe asking you, what is the goal of the company? That is, what does the board of directors have you doing? Where do you want to take this company? Where does the board want you to go? What are the objectives? I mean, you're an exploration company, so I guess probably it's to find a sizable deposit, but perhaps you can just elaborate a little bit on that.
Sure, I'd certainly be happy to. We are a fairly pragmatic group of people at the board level, and even though I've had experience with large companies that produce gold, I certainly don't pretend to be a production line person. So, you know, we all realize that producing gold is hard enough to find gold, but producing gold as an operating mine is always very difficult. So we take the pragmatic approach of trying to define a resource that would be attractive to a larger company, potentially either as an outright takeout or a joint venture, and utilize the skill sets that larger companies have to advance and develop and potentially produce gold from a deposit. So our objectives are fairly clear-cut in that regard. And while we stay very focused on gold at this stage, that's the only commodity that we're searching for. And we have sort of taken a fairly focused approach too in terms of geography. We're focusing in the Eastern Canadian, the Superior Province, which is the very well-known Abitibi Greenstone Belt area that straddles the Ontario and Quebec borders. Significant gold production, as most of your listeners would know, in excess of 170 million ounces have come out of this area. So one of the truly great mining areas of the world. So we by keeping it fairly simple in terms of our focus geographically as well as the production, knowing what our limitations are with production, we're clearly looking for opportunities to advance a project and potentially in such a fashion that it attracts a major player to come along and either join with us or take the project on completely. So that's our objectives.
That's the objective. And you're in a part of the world where there are other majors. So you have all the infrastructure that you need there, the people, the regulatory authority there in Quebec, one of the best in the world. And your flagship property is the Chevrier project. It's I think some 95 square kilometers in the Abitibi Greenstone Belt, as you mentioned. For the sake of listeners that may not have heard you before, can you tell them a little bit about your current resource and what remains to be done to outline a deposit of sufficient size that might attract a major?
But certainly. At the present time, the project had seen extensive work up until about 2010. We acquired the property in 2016 and have basically inherited a large amount of historic drill data. So consequently, moving towards an updated resource involves validating those historic data. So the most recent resource report for the property goes back to 2010. It was still compliant under 43-101, and it was reported as around about 300,000 ounces at 2 grams. Mm-hmm. We know from researching the historic records for the property that previous groups, larger companies by the like of InMet, which is the old Falconbridge Copper Group, the reputable mid-tier blue-chip base metal producers ostensibly, but good mining companies, had come up with significantly larger numbers, but those numbers predate 43-101. So we believe that the older work cannot necessarily just be discounted, so our intent was to see if we could improve upon the report from 2010. We believe we will be able to do so. So we completed approximately 10,000 meters of drilling in 2017. Those assay data results have been released, and we are working towards an updated resource, which we are scheduling for the third quarter of this year. So that is where we're heading. It's interesting, the Chibougamau area, where the project is located, is about 300 kilometers to the west of the Val-d'Or camp, which some of your listeners may be aware of, one of the preeminent gold-producing areas in Quebec. And because production ceased from some of the mines in the Chibougamau camp around about 20, 25 years ago, there's no current mill within the immediate area. About 100 kilometers away, there is a mill that's currently producing gold, and it may present some synergies for us in the future in terms of infrastructure existing, which would obviously minimize capital requirements to build a new mine, freestanding mine.
What do you think in terms of ounces do you need to start attracting a major? Do you need a couple million ounces, or what do you need? Or let's say a mid-tier producer even.
A very interesting question, Jay, because recently as about a week ago, IM Gold has optioned into a property called Monster Lake, which sits about 15 kilometers to the south and west of our Chevrier property. Mm-hmm. They have been spending quite a bit of money on their earn in to get to about a 70% interest. They published the initial resource estimate for that property, and it came in at just under 500,000 ounces at around, I think it was 12 to 13 grams. Mm-hmm. But intriguingly, it's a deeper target, so it is an underground operation. That's how they would model it. So that is quite a bit of a paradigm shift in our thinking, too, because we traditionally would look at Chevrier as a standalone. I think the magic threshold that most people would like to see us achieve would be something approaching 1 million ounces.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, you know, I think fairly wide held belief that you need that sort of level of contained ounces to move towards any advanced feasibility study or something like that. But the opportunity, or at least potentially there may be synergies in the future, who knows, that
mm-hmm.
most of the ounces that we see at Chevrier are near surface, potentially open pittable.
Mm-hmm.
So given that IAM Gold is developing a deeper underground deposit, the potential may exist for, who knows, some synergy, operating synergy.
Sure.
There. So perhaps our threshold need not be as high as 1 million ounces.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just have to see where we end up in, as I said, in Q3 of this year. But it has made us start to think about, operational synergies between two adjoining relatively close projects. And as I said, it's about 15 kilometers between the two properties, connected by a fairly extensive road system, a three-lane wide gravel road that's maintained year-round by the province of Quebec. So fairly good access between the properties. We don't know if that may end up being a reality, but at least
sure.
it gives us a different different way of looking at Chevrier.
Well, you may not need 1 million ounces, but I can't help but notice you do have a historical resource in addition to your 43-101 compliant resource. You have a historical resource. I think it's on something called the South Zone, which is one of many different targets that you have on your larger property. But that South Zone had 540,000 ounces of historic gold ounces, and I guess you can't include those in your thinking right now because you have to make them compliant. Is there any are there any plans to go ahead and try to make those compliant anytime soon? Because if you could add 540 to 300,000, you'd be getting up towards 1 million ounces pretty fast.
No, that's a very good point, Jay. Our immediate plan is that, as we know, I mean, the capital cost of mining. What we do have, just as an aside with the board, is we have a very good technical group, and all of whom have worked for major companies, well, many of whom have worked for major companies and hence have an understanding of what it takes to get a mine across the the finish line, shall we say.
Sure.
What we have done is made a conscious effort to focus on the main zone because we know that they are near surface ounces, and that would be that's the main thrust for our work this year, as I said, to get to that resource update in Q3. The South Zone is a deeper target. It hasn't been drilled as extensively as the main zone, so it may require quite a few more holes than is currently in the historic database. So we are scheduling that for potentially early 2019 as another target on the project area.
Mm-hmm.
We also have multiple near surface showings that we still have to follow up. So the South Zone would fall into that category of obviously clear targets that we need to follow up either later this year or early in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed, I was just looking at a map that I had last year of your property, and it showed, I think, 8 targets, and now a more recent one showed 11 targets, if I counted properly. So you're obviously,
right.
Your surface work is showing more and more things to shoot at, and I guess what you're trying to do is to expand the ounces laterally and not go to depth, but you can get open pittable. I mean, my goodness. Nearly 2 grams per ton is pretty rich these days for open pit mines that you've got up there on the main zone, right?
That's exactly right, and that's what I think would be fairly attractive to a potential acquirer is the overall contained grade within anything that could be open pittable. At the same time, as you made mention of the number of targets, we have a great geological team now working with this younger team, all Quebec-based, and they've taken the time, which was what the project needed. They've taken the time to synthesize everything, integrate the historic data with the new data, and start looking at the regional setting of where gold occurs. And they've had many, many discussions with Quebec government geologists, and I think it's helping us understand the controlling structural corridor that exists on the property, and hence the number of targets have increased, as you pointed out, as a consequence of our better improved understanding of the regional context of these structures.
Do you see a possibility of increasing those 300,000 ounces on your main zone? I know that you are sort of focused now on two different areas of that main zone, but is that in your plans for this year, your plans to expand the main zone? What are your plans for the exploration in 2018?
For 2018, we've actually, our focus is the updated resource for the main zone. So we are confident that we can improve upon the 300,000 ounces that were made public in 2010 by previous owners of the property. At the same time, our geological team have seen some fairly strong synergy or similarities in the setting of the main zone with the geology at a Goldex mine close to Val-d'Or. Goldex is owned by Agnico Eagle, and it may surprise some of your listeners to hear that they are operating underground at a cutoff grade of less than half a gram per ton.
Yeah,
so
that's pretty incredible.
It's pretty incredible, but it works because they are moving large volumes of material underground. It's bulk underground mining, as they call it, and because of the cost efficiencies of moving large amounts of material, they can keep the unit costs down. So we see similarities, even though our geological modeling that would lead into the resource estimate for the main zone sees two to three bodies that extend from surface down to about 500 meters depth. We do have a deeper hole under one of those wedges of mineralization that is down in excess of 500 meters, and it returned more than 1 gram over 40 meters. And that would be the type of material and the thicknesses that we would envisage we would need to develop a deeper underground target below the pits, potentially open pittable material, very, very much in a similar fashion to what Agnico Eagle has done at the Goldex deposit. So it's a new understanding of the deposit, which provides for it'll be a large driver of our exploration work this year. We think that we have enough drill holes into those mineralized blocks that are near surface, potentially open pittable, that we do not need to do any more drilling in that area. So the bulk of our drilling will be testing the deeper extensions to see if we can validate the Goldex analog at Chevrier. So,
all right. Well, that's really good. Now you we'll be looking for the resource. I guess that's one, that's the driver, and that's in Q3, you say. So we're looking maybe six months away from now. Six months anyway. Any other drivers? What should people be looking for? And also, are you going to need to raise any money anytime soon? You got a $6 million market cap, for goodness sakes, and we're talking about a comparison with the Goldex mine. If that kind of thing comes to be, there's no way this is an 8-cent stock, 10 cents
no,
in
I,
Canada, I guess.
I agree with you completely. Yeah, we will have to go to market at some stage before we get into an aggressive underground, not underground, but deeper drilling program. That's one aspect of the consideration. But once we are drilling, and we believe that because we are in Quebec, we're what's called superflow through eligible. There is a keen interest in amongst Quebec investors for mining projects in their own province. So we'll be looking at opportunities in the near term in terms of financing opportunities. But the other catalyst will be because of that the deeper drilling program, we'll see assay news coming out throughout the summer months as well, leading up to the resource update. So it's not just really just a question of waiting until Q3 for the resource update.
Okay.
We have other news flow coming. Yep.
Okay, great, Brian. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank you for giving us an update. Really interesting, I think, although the market seems to be yawning over this stock right now. Boy, if you can look at the possibilities and if they come to be, the upside, I believe, is very enormous. So thanks very much, Brian, for being with us. And folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away because Alistair McLeod will be joining me after the break to talk about how China is planning to end its dependency on American trade and the U.S. dollars. Has some very profound effects possibly on our markets. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Alistair McLeod.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Novo has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog, Press Pass? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective. Plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite host. It's just a click away at vapresspass.com. That's vapresspass.com. VA Press Pass by Voice America. All access, all the time.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me Alistair MacLeod. He's been a fairly frequent guest here, I think probably next to Michael Oliver, the most frequent guest probably. And well, it's because I just enjoy his insights. I read his material at goldmoney.com, where he publishes once a week very thoughtful and insightful insights about the markets, about what's going on, connecting geopolitics with the markets to a great extent. And he has quite a background as an analyst, as a stockbroker, and he understands what honest money is, real money, gold. And so that is one of the main reasons that Alistair is invited on this show, and we're so grateful that he agrees to join us so often from what is getting close to his bedtime in England. Thank you for joining me, Alistair.
That's very much my pleasure, Jay.
Well, it is so much fun listening to you. I wouldn't say maybe fun is the wrong word, because a lot of the things you have to say are not necessarily fun, but they are realistic, I think, and truthful. And truth is what we seek on this show as much as anything else. We'd like to make some money from understanding the world as it is. China has risen very rapidly from what was known when I was a young person as a sleeping giant back in the day when Nixon was president, and he sort of opened things up with China during that time. But now China is growing very rapidly. Their economy is growing, and with their economy, they're building up their military to a certain extent. They're building infrastructure that is challenging America, American trade, and hegemony, I would say, in parts of the world, especially in Asia. I'm wondering if you could comment on China's rise to become such a global power in a relatively short period of time, in a few decades. You know, from the days of Mao Zedong, when it was sort of an internal organism that didn't do much or talk to the rest of the world until it is now. How did China achieve such a rapid climb?
Well, basically, they follow, if you like, Confucian principles, which basically we would call mercantilist, where the state runs the economy as if it was a business. Mm-hmm. And after Mao died, around about 1982, round about then, they began to encourage Western businesses to set up manufacturing capabilities on the mainland. And this meant there was a lot of inward investment. So at that time, there was a trade deficit because of the inward investment, but that was quite rapidly overtaken by production. China became, if you like, the source of cheap goods for the world, and obviously America. Really growing from there, she's now entered a new phase, and that is she has lifted a lot of her population from subsistence level farming into sort of lower and middle classes. And the middle classes are growing quite rapidly, and that's what a lot of the development is about. So the economy is now moving from exporting cheap stuff to countries like America and Europe and Britain and so on, into providing the services and higher quality goods and technology for her own citizens. So it's a very big change in emphasis. But when you look at the rate at which the Chinese economy is growing, of course, the measure is GDP, and the GDP is just a money total. So in a sense, when you see that the Chinese economy is growing at 10% year after year, or 6% or whatever it is, it's really a function of the expansion of bank credit. And of course, we all know that that can only go so far. But what they're now doing is they're trying to jump down on the speculative the consequences of the expansion of bank credit. I mean, for example, traders who try and front run the state when it comes to buying commodities, you find that what happens is that the Chinese government start leaning on the shadow banking system, and the shadow banks then have to withdraw from facilities from the speculators. So you find that, hey presto, we've got copper going down, we've got nickel going down, we've got lead going down, we've got silver going down. So these, I would hesitate to call silver base metal, but basically that base metal complex is shaking out the Chinese speculators, as it were, and this is as a result of monetary policy within China. But that will change, because China has really more or less cornered the global market for infrastructure materials, because she is going to be building her electricity grid. She is going to be building new rail communications, all those things which require huge amounts of copper. And on top of that, she's looking to industrialize her own backyard. And we're looking really at virtually all Asia. And the consequences for Europe are also very important, because with the new Silk Road, trains are now delivering huge quantities of goods in both directions. And at the moment, it takes something like 12 days to get from get a Mercedes car, say, from Stuttgart into the showroom in Beijing, just 12 days. Whereas if it went by sea, you would be looking at 30 days. Mm-hmm. So you can see that this is a huge change in the way everything is done and everything is happening. And, of course, part of this is that China wants effectively to run her own affairs in the global context as much as possible. And this is why she doesn't want to use the dollar. She's seen America use the dollar as a weapon, if you like, against other nations. And she doesn't want to be in the position of weakness where America might do that. So this is really her driving motivation for getting her trade partners to accept yuan. And I would just add one little point here, which is, I think, missed by everybody. And that is that over the last year, the yuan has been a better currency to take payment than the dollar. And this is very, very important. And I think it is encouraging, particularly the oil exporters to China, to take yuan rather than oil. And this, of course, has implications for the petrodollar and the way the world has operated on a dollar reserve basis, and with the major commodities all priced in dollars ever since the early 1970s. So it's an interesting juncture, I think, this point in China's development and how it is affecting the world as a whole.
Could you explain, perhaps, Alistair, how the reserve currency that the U.S. has had, which I think was what was orchestrated during Nixon's day, the petrodollar, was the petroleum-backed dollar, in a sense, where when he took away gold from the international monetary system, and then Kissinger sets out to work a deal with Saudi Arabia and the oil producers, demanding dollars for payment of oil. And now, as you've talked about on this show before, China is the largest importer of oil now, and they're saying, you know, we're not going to give you dollars, we're going to give you yuan. And but how does the United States, or how has the United States used its currency to get over on other countries and perhaps take advantage of them? How does it work that? How does it do that?
Well, the way it works is that, as you probably know, if I, as someone living in the UK, have a dollar balance, I might have the dollar balance through my bank account, but actually the dollar balance is in New York. It's not mm-hmm. here. And so if I need dollars in order to do trade settlements, then I have to buy my dollars in order to do it. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't take the dollars away from New York. What it does is it expands the quantity of dollars within the American banking system. So you can see that it costs absolutely nothing for the Fed to provide me with dollars, but at the same time, it allows the Fed to expand the quantity of dollars in circulation in the U.S. banking system. So really what happens is that you've got this sort of dichotomy, as it were. On the one hand, I'm in the market having to buy dollars so that I can go and buy oil or whatever it is that I want to buy. On the other hand, you can run your economy as badly as you like over there, but I still need the damn dollars. So this was the point, I think, behind the Triffin dilemma. Because what Robert Triffin, who was a Belgian American economist, sort of 30, 40 years ago, what he understood was that by being the reserve currency, what the dollar was doing was it was able to overvalue its currency because of international demand, and at the same time run its economy on a basis that would otherwise undermine the economy. And it's for this reason that you have had the most enormous balance of payments deficits for some considerable time without it affecting the dollar. That's it's all slightly counterintuitive, but that is the way in which the exorbitant privilege, if you like, of the dollar actually works.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a very large buildup of dollars in foreign hands. And funnily enough, this is the subject of an article which will be released later on this week.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting. We'll look forward to that for sure. But you're saying that the Chinese currency has outperformed the dollar. So people who sold oil to China would have been better off taking yuan over the last year than dollars, eh? And that's without exchanging their yuan for gold.
That is correct, yes. The yuan is up about 9% over 2017 against the dollar. So that's the extent to which you would have benefited.
So now we have this. Can you comment a little bit on the Shanghai Oil Exchange, the futures exchange? It just opened, I believe it was March 26th when it went live. Is that right? And how is it performing?
Yes, you're right. It went live on March the 26th, and the first week's trading has been very successful. In the first 3 days, the equivalent of 60 million barrels of oil were traded. And given that China's daily intake, if you like, import of oil is around about 8 to 8.5 million barrels, you can see that the size of the market looks like developing into having sufficient liquidity, really, for China to settle all her oil imports convincingly in her own currency. The thing that's interesting about this is that there are some nations who export to China who would also like to avoid the dollar. So they're on the same page, as it were, as China is when it comes to not wanting to use the dollar. The principal ones, obviously, are Iran and also Russia. Russia is now the largest exporter of oil around the world, having overtaken Saudi Arabia, just. Iran sells a lot of oil to China. And we can see particularly those two nations who we know like gold, they use gold as money, they are likely to, if you like, use the futures markets for to hedge some of their yuan exposure into matching gold contracts. Now, there are yuan gold contracts traded in both Hong Kong and also Dubai. Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly, the Chinese authorities appear to have given the blessing to an arrangement between Dubai and Hong Kong, and they've also brought in other centres like Singapore. They're talking, believe it or not, to Myanmar, you know, the old Burma, mm-hmm. And also possibly Cambodia. What they're looking to do is to set up what's being described as a gold corridor. Mm-hmm. What these centres, particularly Dubai and Hong Kong, see is increased demand for deliverable gold futures. Now, they're tagging it as being the result of the Silk Road project and the amount of business that's likely to come into the futures market as a byproduct of that. But actually what they're doing is they're looking to gear up within 2 or 3 months to have storage facilities, which they've already contracted for, on the Chinese mainland, so that there is a depot, if you like, for physical gold to be deposited and delivered with these contracts. So I think the very fact that two rival exchanges are getting together basically tells me, and I think it tells the world, that they see, as a result of the development on the energy contracts in Shanghai, there is likely to be a greater demand for gold. They need to get together in order to be able to satisfy it. So it is a double blow, if you like, as far as the Americans are concerned. On the one hand, the petrodollar is no longer being exclusively used, and there's not a lot America can do about it. And on the other hand, it would appear that some of the users of this contract are likely to hedge into gold and could end up driving the gold price up, which, as far as the American Treasury are concerned and the Fed are concerned, is a development they would not want to see.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, this is a direct competition against the dollar hegemony, and to a certain extent, if a good part of the world isn't using dollars anymore, that privilege ceases to exist to the same extent it did before anyway. And you're saying there's not much that can be done about it, and yet I'm hearing growing rhetoric here in the United States all the time about how China is a bigger and bigger threat to us, and how you know, we need to flex our military muscles in order to try to resolve this threat. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, certainly you over there on your side of the pond, the Brits are pretty much with us on this, or at least the public officials seem to be. What are your thoughts about that? And in fact, I'd like to ask you about another article you recently wrote, The End of Democracy, and you're suggesting that these growing geopolitical tensions are probably going to impact us negatively in terms of the democracy that we in the West have enjoyed for so many years.
Well, I'll come to democracy in a moment. That is, if you like, I'm afraid a continuing miserable story. But yeah. Getting back to your basic point about the increase in tensions between America and China, mm-hmm. Yes, that is certainly the case. And I think the reason that the Chinese have taken so long to introduce this contract is they have been concerned about the effects on the dollar that might follow. Because remember, they are very large holders of U.S. treasuries, apart from anything else. And the other thing is that the trade relationship with America is a very, very delicate thing. I think when President Trump got elected, it did rather change things as far as China was concerned, because they see him, I think, as a bit of a bull in the China shop rather than a subtle operator. Mm-hmm. And consequently, I think that the Chinese got themselves into a position whereby they really had to go ahead with this contract, because the very fact that they were insisting as much as possible that their oil suppliers take yuan meant that they had to provide the, if you like, the financial depth for people like Russia to really seriously consider this and use it going forward. So they lost, I think, a little bit of the timing in terms of control over the timing as to when this contract was going to go out. It had to go out. The problem, I think, as far as America is concerned, is America did not want to see this contract because of the petrodollar issue. The fact that it has gone ahead, I think, has increased trade tensions. And I don't think it's an accident that President Trump started off immediately after the start of this contract was announced, before it actually started trading, with tariffs on steel and aluminium. And that has obviously continued and gone into other products as well. China has hit back with tariffs the other way. And so you've got this sort of tit for tat thing going. This, I think, was inevitable. But I think that the thing that has set the timing of it has actually been the introduction of this contract because of that petrodollar angle.
All right. Alistair, unfortunately, we're going to have to let it go there. I hear a discussion in the future about trade wars with you. And as far as the demise of democracy goes, I would just suggest that people go to goldmoney.com, and read that article, and also sign up and get on the mailing list to receive Alistair's weekly missives, or go to goldmoney.com to read what he has to say, because they are very insightful, very helpful, and very practical in terms of how we view our investments, I think, going forward. Thank you so much again, Alistair, for being with us, and always a pleasure. I hope we can have you back again sometime soon. Folks, that is all the time we have this week. Next week, former Congressman Ron Paul, presidential candidate, will be with us to talk about, I think, some of the same topics that we just talked to Alistair about. I'm sure you're not going to want to miss next week with Dr. Ron Paul. Until next week, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Bonterra Resources, an advanced exploration company, is aggressively expanding its high-grade Gladiator gold deposit in Quebec, Canada. Over the last 12 months, Bonterra has raised over $60 million and has attracted strategic investors Eric Sprott, Kirkland Lake Gold, and New York-based Vanek Gold Fund. Bonterra is focused on updating its 43-101 resource in the second half of 2018 and will incorporate up to an additional 100,000 meters of drilling, where the dimensions of the Gladiator deposit have been expanded to date nearly 500%. Bonterra trades in Canada under the symbol BTR and in the U.S. under the symbol BONXF.
Auren Resources is a technically driven, capital-efficient exploration company focused on delivering shareholder value through accretive project acquisition and discovery. The company's management team has a record of success in the discovery, advancement, and monetization of exploration assets. Auren's focus is on advancing its 7 premier gold exploration projects located in Canada and Peru. Auren's shares trade on the TSX in Canada and the NYSE American in the U.S. under the stock symbol AUG. For more information, please visit AurenResources.com.